choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game, better educated about your money, so you can live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Salutations, greetings, and hello! My name is Stephen Briggs. I am the owner of Briggs Financial. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 51. Is it time for an attitude adjustment? Now, in my line of work, I see as a proxy for professional financial advice, people flock to shelves, usually in the next couple of months, going toward the self-help section. And from Tony Robbins to Susie Orman to Dave Ramsey and so forth, a mass of people on an annual basis go into that literary, you know, there's such a buildup of frustration, I think, during the year. And we don't talk about it. We try to just put it back of our mind because our lives are running and we have a million other stresses as well. But it's around this time of year, especially as the holidays come up, when we see family and start kind of reflecting on how the last year has gone. Maybe one of our family's members just got a brand new car or bought a house or they had a baby or a big promotion at work or something. And we see these things kind of go on and happen to our friends and our family and people, and we're talking and celebrating. And maybe you're just sitting there going, I'm not happy with where I'm at with my money. And so people, you know, in many cases, you know, sit there and think about it and say, well, I want to do something about that this year. So you go into, like I said, the self-help section and you pick up one of these books. And interestingly, and I actually wrote a book 3 years ago called Spend Smarter in 28 Days. I'm in that section as well. But the thing about my book that's different than those other books, he goes, oh, you can just pitch a book. No, not at all. The tendency I found in those self-help books, and it drove me kind of nuts before, and I wrote my own as kind of a response to theirs, is that they tend to want to jump straight into the complete solution in terms of the very, you know, they'll start off by at least acknowledging some of the basics when it comes to mindset and behavior and spending and saving money. And they kind of brush through that in about 20, 30 pages. Even Total Money Makeover with about 100 pages goes through and it covers that stuff and you'll get some stories, but that and that's it. And then you get another 200 pages on every, I would say, pretty advanced concept, from retirement accounts to adjustable rate mortgages to what do we do for college savings and so on. And it kind of goes, it spends a good chunk, you know, the majority of the book, and the majority of every one of these books seems to go into, I would say, these much more advanced topics. And the problem with that is that the advanced topic stuff isn't where people get hung up with their money. That is not where we're stumbling in this world. And my question is, well, okay, so where are people getting stumbling? And the answer is just getting through day to day. Most people have, when I sit there in the intro of this podcast, and I say most people, you know, most Americans have little or no net worth. I mean it. 22% of people age 60 and older have $100,000 or more saved for retirement, which means 78% don't. Fidelity, you know, with its survey back in Vanguard back in, you know, in April and May, talking about people with, you know, that the average 401k they have has $150,000 to $170,000 in it for people 60 and older, and yet the median 401k account had less than $60,000 in it. That's a problem. And that problem is not an advanced problem. That problem is a basics problem. That problem is a way before we ever talk about those advanced topics problem. So why do all these books spend 2/3 to 3/4 or more of their time talking about big, freaking grandiose things when that's not what the problem is? It's because the problem is actually really hard to solve. The problem and the solution to that problem, that solution is not guaranteed to work. The solution to those, the basic problem, our mindset, our behavior, there is no one Rosetta Stone. There is no key that just unlocks and magically says that all your problems financially are gone. It's because there's a lot of factors that go into what happens to us financially. Some of these things we can control. Some of these things we cannot control. Some people roll incredibly poorly on the life luck dice. And even when they play the game as best they can, there is the potential to lose. Yep, you heard it here. So, and the thing is, self-help books and self-help, people want to teach self-help and do their classes and seminars and all this, do not want to acknowledge that that failure exists. And that that is a potential outcome. No one wants to talk about failure. Yeah, you don't want to talk about failure. It's tough to deal with failure. You go to a self-help, you go to a seminar or a class, the goal is to not fail anymore. You've gotten to hear about failure enough. Well, the problem with that is, if you don't acknowledge how we can succeed and how we can fail and what the risks and rewards are and whatnot, we're just not being honest. And our approach isn't honest. And the result will likely not be honest. So ignoring mindset, ignoring behavior, and not actually facing up to this stuff is not an option. Because our behavior and how we make decisions with our money influences our ability to actually do all the other advanced things that you eventually want to be able to do that those books talk about in the back, you know, in the back 2/3 of them. The other part of this, though, is that when it comes to making decisions regarding money and wealth, it is far easier to do those much more advanced things when you have money. And I'm going to give you some data on this. So I was just reading this morning in American Banker that McKinsey and Company just did a study. And this study said that 18% of people with under $10,000 in savings would even consider online banking options, irrespective of the terms, what have you. But that 28% with people over $50,000 would consider those options and actually gravitate toward those options. And in many cases, when we look at what's happening with online banking and online-only accounts, we're seeing stronger earnings rates and savings accounts. We're seeing better terms from loan terms and the whole bit. So if they're insured the same way and look at, literally, people who could benefit the most from these tools and resources write them off the most often. Yet people who have significant amounts of resources or more resources than them by a factor are much more open to considering these solutions. Why? It's not because people without savings are stupid, or that people with savings are infinitely smarter than them. That's not true. I have seen people both with wealth and not with wealth make equally smart and dumb choices. It happens. There's no more IQ power in there. So why does one group feel more comfortable optimizing than the other? Because when you have less, you feel much more under the gun. When you have less, you feel the stress compounding when bills come up. you feel when unexpected expenses come in. The car breaks down. I chipped a molar. I need to go into the dentist. Oh my gosh, there's $1,500 worth of work. Even the idea of, even if those things aren't happening, the status quo of not having what you feel like you need, and that not changing, and you know time is working against you, you can feel it. You can feel the idea of the dread of rent going up. Even if you get a raise at work, oh, you get a 4% raise. Hey, look, here's my 4% increased rent. Whoops, there went my check. Neat. Why am I doing this? Well, and the whole thing, in the meanwhile, if you're even sitting at that status quo, you're looking at going, and when the next emergency hits, where's that money going to come from? It's a constant pressure. It's a constant weight. There is nothing increasing, or you're very worried about something decreasing rapidly. And whether you recognize that or not, that presses on you emotionally. When you are compromised emotionally, you do not make rational decisions. Lots and lots of studies. I mean, 3 Nobel Peace Prize or Nobel Prizes in economics in the last decade or so have been on this very topic. The field of study, by the way, is called behavioral economics, behavioral finance. And it's the idea that our emotions, when we are emotionally compromised with our decision-making, that affects us in a negative way. When we are not emotionally compromised, we have the ability to make our best choices, and we tend to. But this is also a reason why, even with clients that come to me with wealth, why we talk a lot about the small stuff, the little decisions. Because the thing is, these seemingly little choices, and it can be things as simple as how many subscription services you have in your household. It can be things like how you eat food, and how much you go out versus cooking in, etc. What you have to realize is that these little choices and the seemingly small ones, they reflect attitudes about what you value. And I want to make sure we understand, what is an attitude? An attitude is a settled way of feeling or thinking about something. So if you tend to eat out much more frequently than you cook in, that is an attitude. It's an attitude that is an aversion to preparing your own food, an aversion to probably grocery shopping to a degree, an aversion to the work it takes to prepare meals for yourself. And those decisions to not do some of these things, or even for that matter, if you look at the attitude of what you buy at the store. Are you buying fresh fruits and vegetables and meats and preparing things, or are you going to the freezer section? Are you going to the chip aisle all the time? Are you going to the processed food areas of the world? Is that your attitude about what you're going to ingest is? Well, it's an attitude. And the thing is, when you take that attitude and you blend it with your other attitudes, this all together, all those different attitudes, that forms your behavior. Your behavior, by definition, being the way you conduct yourself. Let's go back in. Your attitude is a settled way or feeling of a settled way of feeling or thinking about something. And when you take all those different ways of feelings and thinking about things, you ball those up, that is your behavior, the way you conduct yourself, the way you act. So what we have to recognize, what you have to recognize, is that in order to change your behavior with your money, to go from a consumption mindset to a wealth-building mindset, you have to change your attitude. In this case, attitudes, plural form. You have to have multiple attitude adjustments. Now, what is most difficult about making an attitude adjustment is the definition of this, is that in order to do this, you think about it, remember what an attitude is, a settled way of feeling or thinking about something. In order to adjust that, you have to own that what you're doing right now, that attitude, that way you feel, is wrong. you're wrong. No one likes to be wrong. I would get upset, you know, when I was in school, I would get upset. And when I got something wrong in school, I'd cry. I would break down physically and cry. We've had ingrained in us since our schooling days that being wrong amounts to us being insufficient, deficient, bad, unacceptable. Drilled into us. And if you're nodding your head at that, one, I feel for you. Because for a very, very long time, I harbored significant, negative, hurtful feelings toward myself whenever I was wrong. I felt ashamed. I felt singled out. It's not a good place to be. But the thing is that we have to recognize that, and you're nodding your head going, yeah, that's me. I've got something to say to you that's really important that you must start internalizing today. That you must know. That I need you to imprint on your heart. It is okay to be wrong. It is okay to make mistakes. You have the power to change your attitude about making mistakes. You are not branded permanently by the decisions you have made up to this point, listening to this podcast today. That you, in fact, can change. That you can grow. That you can learn and make better choices. And what's really neat is that we're actually designed that way. Now, it's not easy. Because the way our brain works, it likes to reward us for doing things. Dopamine gets released to prepare ourselves for pleasurable experiences, like going out to eat, like spending money, getting that new shiny thing. And when that happens, that goes into long-term memory. We build a reward system for consumption. It's short-term. It's addictive. It's a drug. It's literally your brain drugging you up. But the neat thing is this. If you can substitute those actions for different ones and start to reward yourself positively for making different choices, your brain will change to reflect that. We have a quality in our brains called neuroplasticity. It says that while, yes, our brains do hold on to patterns and decisions, and those things are comfortable, they become habits, they become reactions, we can retrain and change what those are. I'm a prime example of that. In 2015, end of the year, I was doing my taxes. I was looking at my credit card and spending. And I looked at that, you know, my credit card, my spend on Starbucks, and it was $1,700 that year. That's an insane amount of money to spend on coffee. Well, it wasn't just on coffee. It was the experience of having someone make my coffee. And it wasn't coffee. It was frou-frou beverages. It was a venti iced caramel macchiato, non-fat milk, extra caramel syrup. Remember it. And what it was when I was so stressed and frustrated, I was just about ready to start this financial planning business up, actually. And I was winding down a contract that I was working on. And things felt, you know, very kind of shaky there a bit. That instead of, you know, I didn't realize I was going to Starbucks 4 days a week at $5 a pop. Didn't have any perception of that because it wasn't a financially driven decision. It was it wasn't a logically driven decision. It was an emotional, it was a behavioral, it was an attitude choice that was driving the finances. And so the thing is, when I saw that, I first recognized, number one, that isn't right. That ain't right, I said to myself. And the second thing I said was, but I did that. After I dug through the bills, of course, because I didn't believe it at first. But when I saw the receipts and I saw what happened, I went, you know, I did that. And by owning that and saying, I did that, not proud of it, I'm going to change that. And so what I did in that case was I scheduled a couple days each week to make my Starbucks treats. And I didn't have it the rest of the time. Made coffee at home. Well, I did that for a year. And by the end of that year, that 2 days a week, the following year in 2017 became 1 day a week. By the end of 2017, it wasn't even 1 day a week anymore. A few weeks ago, I went to a Starbucks. It was the first time I had gone in like 3 months. I went, wow, I went a whole quarter without going to this thing that 3-4 years ago I was going 4 times a week to. What happened? I made an attitude adjustment. And that attitude adjustment over time turned into a complete different set of actions. Different behaviors. And thus, I recouped my money as a result. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to make mistakes. If you want to, you know, change these things, you're going to have to own them. But the cool thing is we can rewire this, and that's pretty neat. So to recap, your behavior with your money is governed by your attitudes. If you want to change your money behavior, you need to make attitude adjustments regarding your lifestyle to produce a different outcome. In order to change an attitude, you have to own that your current attitude is wrong. Forgive yourself for making that wrong and improve that attitude for making better decisions moving forward. When you make an attitude adjustment and improve your decision making, your behavior improves as a result. You have the net result of having more money, which will let you do all the things that eventually you want to do in terms of reducing and eliminating debt, building an emergency fund, starting to save for your retirement, or if you want to buy a house, or if you whatever these other goals and things are that you want to build on top of it that are the back 2/3 of those self-help books, you'll actually be in a position to do all of them. But you get to work on yourself first, and it is a never-ending process of constantly evaluating what your behavior and attitudes are that support that behavior. And then making adjustments as you need to so that your attitudes are consistent with your behavior that you want to see, which is going to be consistent with your overall result. I want to thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Money is Personal. You can catch this and the other 50 episodes on the Briggs Financial website at BriggsWealth.com. We're also on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Player FM. I implore you, if you could please, and if you are an iTunes person, please write a review of the podcast. I'd love to get your feedback on that. And of course, if there's anything I can do for you, hit me up, Steven, S-T-E-V-E-N, at BriggsWealth.com. Thank you so much for listening. Have a tremendous week. Be well, and I'll catch you with a fresh episode next week. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas, and check out the firm's website at www.BriggsWealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making financial or investment decisions and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. Briggs Financial does not give tax, legal, or accounting advice. This information is not meant as financial or investment advice pertaining to your financial situation. Selection of appropriate investment or planning options and or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.